Welcome to the Sports Medicine Podcast, brought to you by the Sidney and J.L. Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance in the Department of Health and Kinesiology at Texas A&M University. At the Huffines Institute, we're always working to facilitate, apply, and bring you the most up-to-date coverage of the wide world that is sports medicine and human performance, all in a language you can understand and share with your friends. And now, here's our host, the director of the Huffines Institute, Dr. Tim Lightfoot.
Hi, this is Tim Lightfoot, host of the podcast that you're about to listen to. We're so excited for the new year for 2018. We hope that it's off to a great start for all of you. Here at the Huffines Institute, it's off to a great start for us. We've launched our new website, so check that out at huffinesinstitute.org. Our apps for both Android and Apple platforms have been significantly upgraded. Pull them down, check them out. We've got here, starting in a couple weeks, the video presentations from the Hillier Discussion 7 that happened just this past November starting. So make sure you check out all these things. And with that, we'll lead on with our podcast of the day. Well, hello and welcome to the weekly edition of the Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance podcast. I'm your host, Tim Lightfoot, and I'm so glad that you took the time to download us and that you're listening today as we bring you another interesting person in the world of sports medicine and human performance. And today is no exception to the rule. We have with us Dr. Stella Volpe from Drexel University. Welcome to the podcast, Stella.
Thank you, Tim. It's really great to be here, an honor to be asked.
Well, it's great to have you on. And we've asked Dr. Volpe on today as part of our Stories Behind the Studies series, where we ask scientists who have published extensively to tell us about their most memorable study and the things that went on behind it. But first, before we get to that story, we want to tell you a little bit about Dr. Volpe. Many of you may remember, or you may not remember, that Dr. Volpe was one of our speakers in the Huffines Discussion 2 way back in 2012. She was actually on our number 84 podcast, which was put out on August 24th of 2012, as a matter of fact. As I mentioned at the top, Dr. Volpe is currently the professor and chair of the Department of Nutrition Sciences at Drexel University. She got a bachelor's in exercise science from the University of Pittsburgh. She got her master's of science in exercise physiology and cardiac rehabilitation from Virginia Tech. And she got her PhD in human nutrition also from Virginia Tech. She has a multitude of research interests. She has a multitude of awards. And as I said, a highlight of her career so far has been the fact that she was one of our Huffines discussion speakers way back in 2012. And so, again, we're so glad to have you on the podcast, Stella. And so, Stella, we're just going to start the conversation with the real simple question that we start all these conversations with, and that is, what is your most memorable study? If I ask you of all the studies you've done, which one pops into your mind as the one that was most fun, most interesting to do?
So, Tim, you know, before you asked me to do this, I was thinking about this, and you know, so many of them have been fun, and I think you would attest to that with your own research. But the one that comes up to my mind was one that we did at a university where we changed the portion sizes in different cafeterias to prevent freshman weight gain. And what comes to mind that was pretty funny about that was when my project manager and I, you know, had to meet with the food service managers and his team, and we had to, you know, ensure that what we wanted to do, we could do, because the idea was changing portion sizes in the university dining halls so that students weren't aware of it, but that it would help to prevent freshman weight gain. That was sort of the premise of the study.
Oh, so wait, before you go further with this, you actually went into the university dining services and you convinced them to change the portion sizes?
We did. We did. And that in itself was not an easy task. So finding a university, first of all, who would want to do it, going back just a little bit of preface to this is I was moving from one university to the other, and so the university at which I was previously, you know, was all into doing this, but then when you move to another university, you're not well known there, so you don't have that, you know, you're building, right, your relationships.
Right. So, who are you and what are you asking us to do?
exactly. So that in itself was difficult. And we also had to find a university large enough where we could, you know, they had more than one dining hall, right, that they had one where we could use as a control and one that we could use as the intervention. So the control dining commons, just for the audience, was the one where we made no changes, where they received the normal portion sizes. And the intervention one was the one we changed portion sizes So, like, everything was cut back by about maybe 10 or 20%. And so in this meeting, prior to everything starting, once this university agreed to allow us to do this, meeting with the food service director, actually, and his managers and other folks, he just looked at me and said to me, "So, Stella, if I hear one complaint, you're done." And I thought, oh, my gosh, I felt like I was in the principal's office, and I got kind of scared because, as you well know, I mean, this is an NIH-funded study. You don't want to mess it up as a researcher. You don't want to mess any study up. I don't mean it like that. Any study is important to us. Right. But when it's a federally funded one, it even like, oh, my gosh, there's even a greater, you know, pressure on you. And when I looked at him and I said, you know, sir, it won't happen. But, of course, then when we're leaving, I look at my project manager and I say to her, now this can't happen. We're both like looking at each other, getting so nervous, despite the fact that, I guess, to those of you out there who've done research, who do a lot of research, who are getting into research, you know, it doesn't matter how often you've conducted a study. There's sort of always something like that, that you're like, oh my gosh, like, yeah, we can't mess this up.
Yeah.
But again, as you know, Tim, there's never a perfect study. You know, there's, especially because my work is all with humans, it makes it even that much more difficult because people are out in the field. We can't control what they're doing, you know? Not to say that your work is any easier, because I know you do a lot of stuff with you know, animals. It's just that it's hard when you're, you know, you can't control people's other things they do aside from what you're doing in your study. So I guess that was one thing that always sticks in my head.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's funny or not, but for me it is funny looking back, but it was also sort of scary at the same time.
Well, the last thing you would expect as a scientific barrier is a food service manager in a cafeteria.
Exactly. And he was a director, so he was in charge of it all. But here's what, you know, his thought was, right? This is bottom line for him. If his clients, i.e. the students, were unhappy and they're paying for this because they're university students, he has to serve the students. So I got it. I got it that where he was coming from. At the same time, you're absolutely right. I was thinking, oh, my gosh, like, right. But that's his job. You know, he has to protect what he does and keep the integrity of what he does and keep his clients happy.
Yeah.
So when you stop to think about it, it was like, well, yeah, I get it. But boy, oh boy, at the time when he said it, I literally just sort of sank in my seat, and I said to him confidently, it won't, you won't. And he didn't. Just the end of the story is he did not. We got to complete the entire study there. They were all wonderful to work with, and we were so grateful for all of their help with him, with the food service managers, with, you know, so many people that were involved, who were involved, because we needed them all. You know, they were so great to us. Always so great to us.
So obviously the premise of the study was that the portion sizes the students were eating was contributing to obesity and other types of negative outcomes. Am I correct with that premise? So how did you change the portion sizes?
So that was the next step in it, because after we got the okay, and then we worked with the food service managers who directly, right, were those who supervised the food service employers,
yeah,
the ones who made the food, served the food. We then had to sort of ask them, can you, for example, cut your pizza instead of 8, I'm making this up,
sure,
but 8 slices make it 16. So we had to ask them to sort of change the way they cut sheet cakes, to change from 88 slices to 96 slices. So an ever slight change in all the ways, when they serve sandwiches, give 2 ounces as opposed to 3. So all those things may not have seemed like a lot,
mm-hmm,
but we made enough changes that we did see not a significant reduction in body mass index over time, but we saw that the intervention group went down a little and stayed pretty steady, whereas the control group went up. And so that the pattern was, and this was a year and a half study, so we followed them from basically freshman year into the first semester of their sophomore year. Some of them were transfer students, but in general, that's who we followed. And we were happy to see that keeping other things, the confounders that could happen, right, exercise, all these other things, that our intervention that was a, what we call sort of a quiet intervention, if you will, environmental, but quiet because the students were not aware of it.
Yeah.
We saw a change. And as an aside, we did get approval that, you know, the students who signed informed consent, but their thought was, we're just following them, measuring their body mass index and their, you know, their fitness levels and their dietary intake over time.
Hmm. Did you tell them at the end that they had been eating smaller portion sizes?
We never did. We wanted to. But the difficult part of it was, is what we, even though those students would have graduated if we did another intervention there,
right.
didn't want to sort of harm it.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't want to, you know, affect it for maybe future studies where, even though, again, they would have been gone, who knows if others would have passed it down and people could have said, oh, yeah, this happened, you know?
Yeah.
But in the past. But another cute story, if I may.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Okay. And that is only because this was really sweet that the one food service manager who was in the, you know, she was the manager of the control dining common, right?
Mm-hmm.
She was so sweet. She said to me, well, Stella, you know what? We could make our portions bigger if you wanted us to, and you make them smaller. And I looked at her, and I said, boy, that is so enticing, but that would be really unethical. But I thank you for caring that much. Like, that was just, to me, she wasn't trying to be, she was just trying to be helpful.
Right.
And, again, two sort of things that I remember so clearly, and I can picture them so well saying what they said, but that was a very sweet thing for me that, that, you know, she wanted to be so helpful. Because again, as you know, and many people know that, you know, I always tell my graduate students, studies are never as important to the people involved, our participants, anybody who might be involved sort of outwardly, as they are to us.
Right.
So the fact that she was so excited about it, being a participant in it, it made me smile. And well, I didn't, just to be clear, I did not have her do that.
Well, it sounds like that they got on board with that, and they became interested in your findings.
They really did, and they were really wonderful about it. As a matter of fact, again, this wasn't at the university where I was at the time. It was at a different university, so they were gracious in giving us space to do our measurements,
yeah.
Because we had to take our measurements in certain places. They were very gracious in everything that they did for us, and even in, because we needed to collect, you know, we needed to have data on when students went to the dining commons to ensure that if indeed they were in the intervention dining common, that they went there at least 80% of the time, right? We needed to make sure that they didn't go to the control one more of the time,
mm-hmm.
or they'd be more of the control participant. They gave us all the swipe card information and canceled out only gave us information on in the participants in our study. So I couldn't thank them enough. We could not have done it enough because it's a very, very large university. So we were very grateful.
So what kind of impact did this study have? Do you know?
Well, that's a great question because so we want to do follow up and I've applied for some of those grants and have not been funded for them because what my goal honestly is,
mm-hmm.
is to do this for 4 years. That was basically a 3-year study, but our intervention was a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
I really would like to follow students for 4 years because they move off campus. They and so what we felt in our short time there, we felt that we did make the dining common employees, the food service employees, aware of food service. The one thing that we did not do that I would do in another study is to evaluate the impact on cost for them,
mm-hmm.
because that's another incentive for them.
Mm-hmm.
And waste. We didn't measure waste because our sole focus was really on the student and their BMI and preventing freshman weight gain.
Right.
We don't have strong data on this, but we did ask students. We did ask students if they noticed changes in the portion sizes, and they did not. Without sort of revealing that that's what was happening, we just said, did you notice any changes in the dining common with portion sizes? You know, we kind of asked it in a very general way.
Right.
But yet it seems like from their dietary records that some of them did change a bit on what they consumed on the outside of dining commons, but not really significantly.
Mm.
So nothing long-term, unfortunately, because we haven't received more funding to continue, but my goal would be to continue. And secondly is my team and I purposely recruited people with a BMI of a healthy range.
Mm-hmm.
And we also purposely did not recruit varsity athletes,
mm.
but I would like very much to include the next time ranges of BMI to see how BMI might impact whether a student gains weight, loses weight, or remains weight stable.
Hmm. Very interesting. Do you know of other types of these kind of field-based studies that have been done like this? This seems to be a pretty unique study.
Well, thank you, Tim. There have been different studies like this. Some have followed students over time and not really conducted an intervention. Others have made changes to dining hall, but not always to portion sizes, just more to food choices.
Right.
And many, though, there have been many conducted in employee situations in the cafeterias of workplaces. So a lot of them have been done there because sometimes those cafeterias are smaller.
You're right.
And they're a little bit easier control. These are pretty tough because they are catering to thousands of students a day, three meals a day.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are, I don't know about Texas A&M, but a lot of them are open all day because student schedules.
Right. Yeah, so this is really a free-ranging kind of experimental group here.
It really is. It really is. And you know, lots of tweaks we could have done, and I'd like to do the next time we do this. Again, I just need to apply again for funding, which I have, and just need to tweak it again based on reviewers' comments.
But these are the type of studies that I would hope our listeners would understand are massive studies, in that you have to have the coordination of a lot of different people to make these things come off.
You really do. And as you said earlier, it sounded like we had buy-in, and we did, and that was a big thing. We had to have buy-in from, in particular, the food service director, the managers, and the food service employees, because without them, it couldn't have happened.
Go
ahead.
No, I didn't say anything.
Oh, I'm sorry. So we also did, we also had what we called process evaluation measures. You know, we would go around each week to ensure that the portions were, again, remaining where they should be.
Mm-hmm.
We did another study in the schools, but in the control cafeterias or dining commons.
Yeah.
So that was something that was very important, because if we saw something kind of changing, we had to discuss it with the food service director, because the food service employees, another side to the study, were also blinded to the study and why they were doing it. Because we didn't want any of them to have an influence on students, because many of them get to know the students and might say, this is smaller than usual, I'm going to give you two. So we wanted to make sure that, we had to make sure that it was blinded on both sides, so that people did not influence one another.
And that's really tough to keep everybody in the dark like that.
It is, because you don't want to be deceitful, right? And that's so far from my nature. But yet we had to do that because we needed to keep the integrity of the study strong.
Well, that was a fascinating study, Dr. Volpe, and I'm so glad that you took the time to share it with us today.
Well, thank you, Dr. Lightfoot, and it's always a pleasure to speak with you and an honor to be on this program, honestly. I really appreciate it.
Well, you're more than welcome, and I'll tell our listeners that we have a copy of that study that Dr. Volpe was referencing on the website associated with this webcast, so you can certainly go in there and pull down that article and read it and see what the final results were. She told us about that a little bit. But you can see the scientific paper as it's written, and you know now some of the story behind the study. And so we hope that will help continue to illuminate what goes on behind the scenes in science to make these actual things happen, because they can be quite complicated at times. Right, Stella?
They really can, Tim. Yes, thank you, because you know that well as being a researcher yourself.
Yep. Well, again, thank you for being with us today, Stella, and I want to thank all of you that have taken the time to download and listen to us today. We hope that you will tune in next week. Actually, for the launch next week will be the launch of our HD7 video series from our Hillier Discussion 7 series this year. We've got another great slate of speakers that will be showing their video clips starting next week, so tune in back in for that next week. And until then, we hope that you all stay active and healthy.
The executive producer of the Sports Medicine Podcast is Carlos Guevara. This podcast is licensed by the Huffines Institute at Texas A&M under an attribution and no derivatives Creative Commons license. You can share it as much as you want, and you can talk or blog about it all you want. Just don't change it or charge money for it. This podcast is made possible by support from the Omar Smith family and the Sidney and J.L. Huffines family. Our music was composed, performed, and graciously provided by Dave Zeltner Productions, your source for quality music and music production since 1992. Find them at www.davidzeltner.com. Our opening and closing credits were provided by John Miles Productions at johnmilesproductions.com. If you have questions or comments, please send them to huffines@tamu.edu. From all of us at the Huffines Institute, we hope you have an active and healthy week.